Who can say where the killer roams, where the blood flows, it's slaying time. Slay away, slay away, slay away.
Hey Slayers, welcome back to Slay Away. I'm Enola Lugosi, and I'm here to chat about lore, gore, true crime, and every kill in between while I review horror films with special guests every other Friday night. On this episode, we'll be reviewing the feminist coming-of-age creature feature, Ginger Snaps, with content creator, podcaster, and spooky merchant, Ashlina.
Whoop, 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 whoop. That's me. Hi.
Ashlina. Ashlina wanted us to let you know that she is a chronically ill LGBTQ plus Latina variety content creator on Twitch who loves giving back to charity, horror, Halloween, and all things cozy. And we can definitely get behind those last three things and also being super queer.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is not Ashlina's first campfire. So welcome back, Ashlina.
Yes, thank you for having me again. I'm really excited.
We didn't get to talk last time.
No.
You and me. So this is the first time for us.
Right.
And are you ready to chat horror and Ginger Snaps with me?
Oh, absolutely. When am I like not ready? You know what I mean?
I don't know. I hope you're always ready as a horror fan.
I am always ready.
Tell me about how you discovered your love of horror.
So I've actually told this story a couple of times, but it always means a lot to me to tell it. I was young. I'm getting a tattoo sleeve on my leg, and I'm realizing that Beauty and the Beast like was my first like horror movie. Cause if you think about Beauty and the Beast and like all of the details it had, the original, not the live action or anything like that, there were some horror elements to it. It was a pretty scary movie for like me to be watching that as a little child. But what I remember more profoundly was, I think I was like early teens, like maybe 13. I never can get the age right because it's just been, you know, a long time, of course. But I had a friend down the road, and her mom kept the house decorated for Halloween all year long. And that's when I fell in love with, of course, everything Halloween. But we would sneak her mom's DVDs or VHSs, slasher movies like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, things like that. And we would watch them. And I just fell in love with it. I didn't know why, but now I know why, because there is so many great memories attached to those movies, obviously, but also just the aesthetic to it and just the way it makes me feel. I really enjoy the cinematography when it comes to horror movies and everything like that. I just think they're beautiful. So I'll say, you know, like my early preteens into my teens, watching movies with my neighbor down the road is how I got into horror.
We could all have moms that liked horror movies.
My grandmother
got me into horror, but my mom is not.
That's interesting.
A horror movie person.
Yeah.
No. I don't know how that happened exactly, but
my mom is not either. And neither is,
she's pretty square.
Right. So. Right. And my dad, like, he'll occasionally, like, maybe watch a horror movie. I am definitely like the black sheep, I guess you could say, when it comes to that, like, because no one else really likes horror movies.
I don't know about my dad specifically, because I don't really know him.
Birth
father wise, but
yeah.
I know that he used to watch like Tales from the Crypt and stuff.
Oh wow, growing up.
But he was like super into Star Trek and stuff.
Gotcha.
Those are the kinds of things that were on the Friday night that was the weekend I had to go to his house. So but my stepdad is definitely into horror films.
And when the
power went out recently, I was looking through his DVD collection, which I'd never done before, and I found all these like old horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that kept me like entertained for while the power was out.
No, I love
not
that
the power, but like the internet was out.
Right,
and I was like,
right.
What am I gonna do?
What are you gonna do without the internet?
So,
right.
Other than the little bit of, you know, battery I had on my phone or whatever. So, you also told me that John Carpenter's Halloween from 1978 is your favorite horror film. So I want you to tell everybody why.
Yes. So first of all, in my opinion, and like obviously everyone has their opinions on this film, of course, but in my opinion, that film is just absolutely just stunning. I've been thinking about it a lot because, like, people just ask me, like, why? And I'm like, okay. I really, again, like I had kind of mentioned previously when I was talking about how I got involved with horror and everything like that, like, the cinematography behind Halloween is truly so beautiful. Whether it's lack of light or just enough light using shadow. One of the first uses, I think it was like the fourth film to use it, of the Panaglide camera that glides in. And just like, yeah, the use of shadows and the use of the dark. And it really creeped me out. It really did. And as a matter of fact, I have a Michael Myers mask behind me here in my office. And sometimes if the shadows and the light in my house are just right, it's freaking creepy. It's literally freaking creepy. And I love it, obviously. But yeah, no, just that was the first film to really like, I think it's a great entrance to horror film. Like, if you have someone who's wanting to get into horror, I think it's one of those things. And like I kind of said in the beginning,
I made somebody cry with just the opening credit sequence and the pumpkin.
Oh, my gosh.
As like the first, because they can't do scary movies. And they started literally just like crying, like
sobbing,
having a really, yeah, like, oh, just from the music and the right opening credit sequence,
right?
And I was like, like, oh, no, me, I'm over here like, oh god, what do I do?
What did I do?
You know,
yeah.
It was actually really funny though. For me, I was like, I mean, I don't understand where you're coming from, but like, don't worry, I'm right here.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and that's kind of great though, to see how somebody else right reacted to that.
Absolutely.
And I love the opening sequence. Yes, me too.
And the music is just like that sound. Da-da-da. Like, I mean, name something more iconic. You know what I mean? Like, there was just so many iconic moments. And like, I think just the enjoyment of watching it with that friend down the road. And, you know, just everything involved with it. The cinematography especially, though, is why it is my favorite. And just like, I'm getting the chills just thinking about it. I think it's a really beautiful film. And it was the first film to like really kind of get into my bones. I don't know if that makes sense, but really, ooh, like really creep me out, give me the chills kind of thing. So yeah, Halloween, fave film.
Yeah, there's definitely horror films that give me the shivers. Nightmare on Elm Street was the first film to get you really intrigued by horror. Do you recall what that first watch experience was like?
Oh, man. So
might be a long time ago, but
no,
not even the whole experience, but right, like how you felt.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I can talk a lot. So if I need to be quiet, you let me know. No, I'm kidding. I remember just being very like, wow, this is iconic. Where have we seen a killer that can enter a person's dream and kill them there? Nowhere. We haven't seen that yet. Wes Craven, you know, really introduced that. It was Wes Craven, right?
Yeah, it's Wes Craven.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I always get them all mixed up. Anyway, so, you know, we hadn't seen that. And Wes Craven introduced just this killer that I was scared to fall asleep. I was scared to go to sleep. And I remember it being such a huge thing for me because I legit was scared to go to sleep and that Freddy was going to find me.
I was more scared of the bathtub.
Right. Right. No, seriously.
The bathtub and my seriously rotary phone. And
yes. Watching TV in the bed. I mean, everything, you know, and like so much blood in that movie. I just, my eyes were stained red after watching it, like, you know, in a good way and in a scared way. I just was so scared to go to sleep. I remember asking my friend if I could spend the night at her house because
there are some really incredible kills in that film.
Yes.
And it's not even where I would consider it gory. Like, yes, there's a lot of blood,
mm-hmm,
but I don't think it's actually a very gory film.
No.
In the sense, in the way that we think about gore now.
Oh, right.
But there's a lot of blood. There's buckets of blood.
Yes.
Liquid.
Yes.
So, and I can't really decide between like whose death scene I like the best, but I'm never gonna get over Glenn in the waterbed. So
yeah. 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 That was like I said, that whole film to me was just iconic. It was that iconic movie for me that was like, okay, there's nothing else like this. And there's still, I mean, in my opinion, there still hasn't been, you know? So, oh yeah, I'm like, oh, whew, just thinking about it. I just remember being like, can I please spend the night? Like, I don't want to go home. Like, it was dark, you know? So anyway, yeah, I love Nightmare on Elm Street. I still love that movie so much.
Ashlina, recently you played the psychological horror video game, The Medium. That's what you told me. So,
yes.
And that was developed by Polish video game developer Bloober Team, who I absolutely mm-hmm. love. They did Layers of Fear. Mm-hmm. We love Bloober Team. So can you give us just a quick, like, what was your reaction to the game?
First of all, Troy Baker. Oh, my God. I don't know. There's like a word that my community and I made up while we were like doing the playthrough of that film or the movie, excuse me. And wait, game. Did I say movie? Game. Whatever. Thing. It was like a movie. And it was scare-roused. Scare-roused. Scared and aroused. And Troy Baker is... one of the characters that he voices in that game just like scaroused me very much. No, but that game was beautiful. One of the things that I remember the most that like stuck out to me the most was their imagery and how they used the brain. You got to travel through someone's brain and it was just a bunch of messy filing cabinets. And it was just a really beautiful way to describe the human brain. And yeah, it was beautiful. I loved that game so much. It was very, obviously, for those who have not played it yet, you know, trigger warnings. There are a lot of triggering things in the game, but they do it well. They do it well. And yeah, I mean, Layers of Fear is kind of the same way in that respect. So, but yeah, no, it was beautiful. I loved that game so much. I don't know if you've played it yet, but
it's something that I have access to and haven't had the time to play yet. I ended up playing Resident Evil Village first, and it doesn't run super well on Steam. So I'm currently stuck at the end of the game, not able to finish it. So that's a whole nother headache story.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to ask you is, how do you feel about indie games? Because based on the description that you just gave, I've got an indie game recommendation for you.
Ooh.
For one that I played during like a Halloween, actually think I played it during the Scarathon, like the second annual one way back
okay.
in the day. So,
I love
this
indie games.
It's from Playmind, is the developer and publisher, okay. and it's called The Inner Friend.
Ooh, okay.
And it also is a very like rich visual experience. It's very immersive with
yes.
the sound, and it is also a what I want to say. It's also a venture through the mind of a
okay.
person and their memories and nightmares. So
oh,
it's really
wow, wow, wow. Yeah. And I love indie games. Indie games are huge on my Twitch channel. We like to play through indie games and that sounds absolutely wonderful.
Great.
Thank
well,
you.
I'll send you more info.
Please, please, please do. Thank you.
And then you also have a, you know, horror merchandise shop, and can you tell everyone about your small business? I think you're on Etsy, but I didn't have more info about it, so I didn't
yes.
want to misspeak.
Yeah, so I do have a Etsy shop, and unfortunately I haven't been able to update it this year because I am currently in the process of getting diagnosed with an additional chronic illness, and we are kind of stuck on rheumatoid arthritis or possible lupus. Like, obviously, I don't want to speak out of turn. We don't know. I'm in the process of getting diagnosed. But I have noticed that when I sit at the sewing machine for too long, my joints lock up, my fingers lock up, and I'm just unable to really do anything else. But I'm trying to get there. Give me some time. But I do have a spooky little shop where I sell scrunchies, little handbags, like little tote bags, headbands and stuff like that. I really miss being able to sit at the sewing machine for longer and do all of it. But that is my spooky little shop. It is called Slash Lena, like slasher movie. And then, you know, the Lena at the end for me. But I love my little shop. I think it's so cute. I just gotta get at the sewing machine whenever I get an opportunity. But yeah, that's a little bit about my small business. Thanks for shouting it out. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah, definitely. We support small business and spooky things here. So / Lena,
yes,
go get a scrunchie.
Yay.
Or something else, whatever.
Right, right.
Whatever's available.
Right, and I do have an Instagram, so.
Oh, yeah, you know, okay.
Right, if you want to follow that, I mean, obviously I haven't posted on it in a while because, like I said, I haven't been able to do any shop updates or anything like that. But, you know, that's where I will say, hey, there is an update, you know, coming out, prepare, you know, and everything like that. And I'm really proud to say that I usually sell out within the hour, so.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Well, let's talk about Ginger Snaps. So the film has slightly differing release dates, but I think the original release date was in 2000. And this is a Canadian supernatural horror film directed by John Fawcett, and it stars Emily Perkins and Catherine Isabel. The film focuses on two teenage girls who have a fascination with death, but also so much more. They are literally obsessed. And one of the reasons I like this film so much is that I am someone who is not only obsessed with horror, but I'm like very much obsessed with true crime and the macabre and all kinds of spooky, weird stuff. And I felt like less of a weirdo watching this film. So I was like, oh, there's other people out there like me.
Right.
You know, these were fictional characters, but it must be true because.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
At the time, you know, they felt very original and not in a way where it's like, oh, they're just a bunch of emo kids, because they very much weren't emo kids.
No.
Or, you know, what became
we
emo
would consider
kids in the early 2000s, right?
Right, right.
Out by 16 or dead in the scene, but together forever. Together forever.
I don't want you leaving the house. The news says there's still some wild animal on the loose.
Let's get out of here.
Danger! Danger!
Looked like a lycanthrope to me.
Think you see werewolves a lot?
Why, do you?
Stop it! No, wait a second.
Drop this. In my truck.
What happened to you?
Ginger Fitzgerald rocked my world.
Could be anything, but here I am thinking, I can throw.
The police want to talk to you. Something about a fight with the missing girl?
What?
Spoiler alert, it is at this time you should stop what you're doing, stop listening to this podcast. And if you haven't seen the film that we're talking about today, please go watch the film, come back, and then continue on this journey with us, because we want you to enjoy it right along with us. Now, let's get back to the film. Ginger Snaps premiered at the Munich Fantasy Film Fest in August of 2000. The next month, it played at the Toronto International Film Festival, where it briefly received media attention following very positive word of mouth after the buildup in Munich. So although one of the standouts of the Toronto Festival, attention really died off of the film, and the film followed with an unfocused release strategy. So it played at various film festivals and built up more word of mouth. So it kind of suffered from not having like a clear strategy for release.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But Ginger Snaps, it was released to Canadian cinemas May 2001. So technically, I guess we'd say it came out in 2001, but that's why it's kind of like unclear
when
the actual release was. But it grossed $425,000 domestically in Canada. And then it made its fifth highest grossing. It is actually the fifth highest grossing Canadian film between December of 2000 and November of 2001.
Interesting. Okay.
So, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
It definitely has a cult following and has achieved very significant, you know, video and DVD sales. And these earnings combined with moderate, you know, theatrical success abroad in, I think, here in the United States led to the production of the two other films. So Ginger Snaps 2, Unleashed, they came out in 2004, and then Ginger Snaps Back, The Beginning, which also came out in 2004. So, which was very interesting to me. But the film was really well received by critics and compared favorably with the work of Artur David Cronenberg. And I think that has to do with like the creature feature stuff. So because I think the comparisons are often with Brundlefly from Cronenberg's The Fly in terms of the creature. And I can definitely see those influences
for sure
in the creature design.
Mm-hmm. So absolutely.
They also praised the lead actress's performances in the film's use of lycanthropy as a metaphor for puberty, which was really, I feel like that's the first time that that was done. And so kind of groundbreaking in a way, very unique. And I don't know if people had made a correlation between lycanthropy
to be perfectly honest,
puberty in the past, but it hadn't been talked about as far as I know.
Right. And to be perfectly honest, you even just saying that right now, I'm like, holy shit. I don't know if I put that together, to be perfectly honest with you. So, surprise.
Yeah, I don't think I really caught on to it the first time I watched the film because I was a teenager.
Right.
At the time, I was like a freshman in high school. So, for me, at the time I was watching it, I wasn't at a point in my life where I was watching films and sort of analyzing them and trying to understand what they were all about.
Yeah.
So you can definitely see it now if you go back and watch it through this like very feminist lens too.
Yes.
But the film won a special jury citation award at the Toronto International Film Festival. And then what it says here is that it was seemingly left for dead upon its premiere at the 2000 Toronto International Film Festival, but it's now considered a cult film, as we know. So it was really well received by critics. It has a 90% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think it has like 58 critics reviews on there, and they praise was very much centered on the quality of the acting by the two leads and the really horrific transformation scene that's where it gets reminiscent of Cronenberg. And then, like we said, the use of lycanthropy. So very cool stuff. But critics who panned the film thought the puberty metaphor was too obvious and that the characters were very over the top, especially the mother. Now, like, don't come after Pam, okay? Because, like, I'm all about Pam. Mm-hmm. And the dark humor and horror elements were unbalanced, but I really didn't feel that way.
Me either.
Personally, I thought it was really refreshing and interesting and something that I hadn't seen before, other than in films like, I guess, maybe Idle Hands, where it sort of comedically played to these darker elements of the film. Like, there was the very obvious, like, it was much more obvious what they were doing in Idle Hands than in Ginger Snaps. I don't know if
I've never
seen
Idle Hands, so I'm gonna have to watch it now.
It's the Devon Sawa of old, back when people were all about Devon Sawa. And I used to have a huge crush on Devon Sawa growing up after Casper. So we don't have to talk about that. That's a story for another time. But it got like pretty high marks overall, though. So the film's links to lycanthropy and menstruation are, you know, it features the two sisters, and then it lends to being a feminist critique, which is really interesting. So simultaneously, it depicts female bonds as important and fraught with difficulties, but Ginger Snaps also portrays the double binds teenage girls face. And so, and this is a quote, and I don't know exactly where it came from, but Ginger is an embodiment of these impossible binaries. She is at once sexually attractive and monstrous, natural and supernatural, human and animal, feminine and transgressive, a sister and a rival. So that's probably from the Rotten Tomatoes. It's probably the top review on Rotten Tomatoes, most likely. It's where we pulled it from. So and then we kind of get this other thing, because like on Rotten Tomatoes, the average rating for the film is like 7.4 out of 10. I assume that's everybody, because it's got like over 50,000 audience reviews. So people like this film.
Yeah. Good.
And the site's consensus reads, the strong female cast and biting satire of teenage life makes Ginger Snaps far more memorable than your average werewolf movie or teen flick. And I'd have to say that's probably true. There were times when I actually felt that the acting of the two leads was a little bit weak with line delivery, but I think that may lend more to writing and not, oh God, I'm so sorry, writers. To writing and not like their performance necessarily. And you know, I think I don't know how much that Catherine Isabel or Emily Perkins had done prior to Ginger Snaps. So
yeah, I don't know either, to be honest. I know for sure that was my first time seeing them in a film. Yeah. When I watched Ginger Snaps.
Catherine Isabel, compared to other things that I've seen her in, does appear to be quite young at the time. So, and I don't know exactly when it was filmed as opposed to, well, we'll get into that. But yeah, I'm not sure. I hadn't seen them in anything else, but I recognize Emily Perkins. And it may just be that I'm watching it again and I'm like, why does she look so familiar?
Yeah.
So, like we said, there are some accolades. So the International Horror Guild named Ginger Snaps the best film of 2001. And then Malaga International Week of Fantastic Cinema, what a name, awarded it best film, best special effects, and best actress, went to Perkins. The Toronto International Film Festival gave it a special jury citation, as we mentioned. Ginger Snaps won the first Saturn Award for Best DVD Release of 2002 from the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films, which is pretty cool. And then Karen Walton won a Canadian Comedy Award for Pretty Funny Writing for Ginger Snaps. So I guess, like, because there are some funny puns and anecdotes in there, there is a lot of like quick-witted humor in the film, but it's not where it's like so funny that it's pulling away from the darker parts of the story. And then Ginger Snaps, I think, was also nominated for a Genie Award for cinematography, editing, and sound editing. So a lot of different things. But yeah, so some of those you might have known already, Ashlina. I learned a lot of them in my research, so because I hadn't done a deep dive on Ginger Snaps before. So let's talk about the cast of characters really quick. So we have Emily Perkins, who plays Bridget Fitzgerald. That's the younger sister of Ginger. Catherine Isabel, who plays Ginger Fitzgerald, and that's Ginger Snaps. Obviously, she's the older sister. Chris Lamesh is Sam, who is like the drug dealer character that lives across town. He's like the older guy with the van that's always hanging around, where normally we'd be like, nowadays we'd be like, go away, go somewhere else. Why are you hanging around children? So Mimi Rogers, who plays Pamela Fitzgerald, they're kind of like very kooky mother. Jesse Moss as Jason McCarty, who is like a kid at Bailey Downs, and he's the one who's interested in Ginger.
Yeah,
he is a douchebag, basically. And yeah, just like,
agreed.
I don't think he's, I don't want to say this, like, Jesse, I don't think you're an attractive kid. Or excuse me, Jason McCarty, you're gross. So Danielle Hampton as Trina Sinclair. So Trina is like the mean girl character on the lacrosse team. Or maybe she's just playing lacrosse in gym class. I don't know. And then, let's see, John Burgos is Henry Fitzgerald, the father, who I think we see for like 5 seconds in this film.
Yeah, literally 5 seconds.
he's totally oblivious to everything that's going on. And then Peter Callahan, who plays Mr. Wayne, he's like a teacher and a guidance counselor. And I think that he is the one where they're doing their film in that class. And he's like, at first he's starting to like be chill. And then he's like, I'm extremely disturbed. See me in the guidance office, mm-hmm. like after class.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a various cast of other characters, but those are the main ones. So let's do a plot walkthrough. This is a fun part. So in Bailey Downs, a rash of dog killings has been occurring, supposedly, right? It's always mm-hmm.
right,
some
right.
wild animal.
right, right.
So Bridget and Ginger Fitzgerald are the two teenage sisters who harbor a fascination with death. And as children, formed a pact to move out of the suburbs or die together by the age of 16. I was like, that's mm-hmm. not very long to get moved out. Like, you're not even yeah, of age.
You're not even ready so, at 16. Like, trust me. Adults.
Right. But one night while on the way to kidnap a dog that's owned by the school bully, Trina Sinclair, Ginger begins her first period. So I remember there was a scene at the dinner table prior to this where they're talking with their mom and dad, like they don't want to be at the dinner table. It mm-hmm. seems like they don't even really eat food.
Yeah.
And their mom is talking about how they both are like super delayed with getting their periods. And I know that's something I went through as a kid. Like I got mine really late too, even though everything else developed right on time. Or early. So like I don't know how that works, but I know that I like developed breasts way before I got my period.
Yeah.
So it's like such a I don't know how these things work. And I haven't been in a biology class in a long time.
right.
So
right.
But the scent of blood results in the girls being attacked by the creature. This is the creature that's responsible for the maulings. At the time, they don't know that it's a werewolf, but the creature bites and wounds Ginger, and Bridget rescues her. The girls flee, and the creature is run over by a van belonging to the drug dealer, Sam Miller. So, it's a kind of a funny sequence of events, and I don't know at what point some of these things happen. Like, the film opens with us getting to watch like that really cool film that the girls made.
Yes.
And it's all about death, and it's yes. Ginger basically getting murdered, or Ginger yes. and Bridget getting murdered or committing suicide in lots of different weird ways.
Yeah.
So but it's that's something, if I were in school, I'm like, oh, that's so cool, you know?
Oh, for sure. Same.
But then they get in trouble with the guidance counselor. And then we see everyone like on the lacrosse field, and they're all smoking cigarettes. And like, where's the teacher? Like, is nobody saying anything? And then the guys are watching from the bleachers, and it's the same thing. They're all smoking cigarettes and like, nobody cares. I don't know if this is just a Canada thing or what, but Canadians, let us know, because it's interesting. But following the attack, Ginger undergoes some transformations. And this is where we get into those metaphors about how our bodies as young women or people who identify as women change throughout this time period. It's interesting because Ginger's wounds heal really quickly.
Right.
She starts to behave aggressively, particularly in a sexual way.
Yes.
Right? And then hair starts to grow out of her scars, which is like really icky, but I love the way that they did it. It looks,
oh, yeah.
It looks really cool, but
it
disgusting
looks so
at the same
good.
Time.
Yeah.
She starts to sprout a tail that she
yep.
like tapes up.
yes.
And then she's like menstruating really heavily.
Right.
So ignoring Bridget's warnings, Ginger, I don't know why she does this. I'm like, Ginger, no. She has unprotected sex with Jason McCarty in the back of his car. Like, she's in heat like a dog. So and then she hits Trina in public.
Oh my gosh.
Like on the
forgot about that. Yes.
Field, I think.
Yes.
Right? And accidentally kills the neighbor's dog. Mm-hmm. I think she eats it.
She's hungry.
This is where things start to get a little crazy. So,
yeah.
Bridget finds Sam for information on what he hit, like the creature.
I don't
know if she assumes that he like picked it up off the ground and examined it.
I don't know.
They both agree that Ginger was attacked by a werewolf and is transforming into one. So at Sam's suggestion, Bridget tries a silver ring piercing treatment on Ginger.
Yep.
And this is when she actually like pierces Ginger's belly button, I think.
Yep.
And it's totally ineffective. So
yeah. Yeah.
I'm too like, late. Also, they do one of those like barely sanitized in your bedroom piercings.
Yes.
In the basement.
Yes. I hated that so much.
Sam then suggests infusing a monk's hood extract, which is impossible to create as the plant is only found in the spring, but they found a lot of it at the craft store.
Mm-hmm.
It probably smells awful. That's the only thing I can think when I look
at
it. So,
Trina,
the bully, shows up at the Fitzgerald house to accuse Ginger of kidnapping her dog. But I don't think they ever actually ended up kidnapping the dog, unless that's the dog that they killed. Like, I don't have no idea.
I
don't know how close Trina lives to their house.
Yeah.
Ginger starts fighting with Trina, and then Trina, like, this is something you see this happen all the time, the whole accidental death scene. Like, she falls backwards, hits her head on the corner of the counter and is dead. And I don't remember at which point the finger came off or if it was bitten off by somebody. I have no idea what happened with the finger. So the sisters, they narrowly avoid their parents while hiding the body in the freezer because there's like blood all over the floor and they're like pretending like it's fake blood because
they're doing one of their little movie scenes again.
Ginger has that great scene where she licks her fingers and is like, corn syrup. And then Bridget accidentally... Bridget broke off two of Trina's fingers.
Okay.
What happened because Trina was in the freezer.
That's right. Okay.
So they're like trying to get the corpse out of the freezer and the fingers get misplaced somewhere, I think in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And they bury Trina under the tool shed. So Bridget tells her sister she cannot go out anymore, but Ginger remains defiant. So
she's
kind of like, whatever.
She's like, I'm badass. Hot. I guess horny, I guess is what it would be
hot,
considered.
Horny.
I am.
Could take on the world.
Exactly. And
do
I
we
think,
all feel like that at some point?
Right. That was my favorite part, was just like, hell no, I'm going out. You see me right now? Nah, I am not staying inside. Yeah, that was one of my favorite aspects.
So tell me about your defiant teen years then, because mine were between the ages of 13 to 16. And I did drugs. I went out all the time. Mm-hmm. I snuck out of the house.
Yeah.
I stole. I did a lot of things I should not be doing.
Right.
So,
right.
And yeah, I did all those things.
That's okay. That's a part of your story.
And a lot of teens do.
Right.
And, but then at some point I don't want to say wised up, but I just like tried to turn shit around because I realized I didn't want to be in high school forever.
Right.
And needed to get my shit together. So,
right. So, mine was later. Mine was after I got my car, because like then I had freedom. I could do whatever I wanted. But yeah, I snuck out. And like, honestly, I went to parties, but like I told my parents I was going to the party, but they didn't at the time. They know now because I've told them. But
I think it was just there was a time period where my mom got really strict all of a sudden.
Yeah. So
then I started to defy her because of the fact that she was being stricter.
Exactly.
And it was based on who she was dating at the time.
Yeah. And my defiant stage was based on who I was dating at the time, who I was attracted to at the time, because they were not, I shouldn't have dated them. Drugs, parties, drinking excessively, sneaking out, you know, and like, hey, mom, dad, y'all know all this. Please don't be surprised if you hear this. But, you know, just like mine was after I got my car. I just felt a sense of freedom, I guess. And, you know, like I said, it was based on who I was dating at the time. I guess it just made me feel like, unstoppable kind of thing, you know. Mine was probably 15 to 17, maybe even just like 15, 16, because I really did love school. I loved school. I loved to make all A's. You know, I didn't mind my parents being strict. I mean, of course, I was pissed because like, oh, why can't I go out with my friends? You know, but I liked school and I liked making good grades and like I did want to go to college and everything like that. So I was finally like, I do not need to be hanging out with this person. It's time to reel it back in, Ash, you know? Yeah. I would say
I was very much like an outcast in school, being neurodiverse. So on Halloween, and yay, it is Halloween time in this movie. So Bridget takes monkshood purchased by her mother for a craft project and asks Sam to make the cure. Sam successfully creates a monkshood extract. And while trying to track down Ginger, Bridget is attacked by Jason, who was infected by Ginger Doo-Doo.
That's right.
Their unprotected sex. So, and she's defending herself by using the monkshood syringe on him. So she only had the one, unfortunately.
Right.
They weren't thinking they would need more than one. So she witnesses his like immediate change in behavior, which proves that the cure works. So at school, Bridget discovers Ginger's murder of a faculty member. I think she kills the guidance counselor.
Oh, I thought she
that teacher from the beginning.
Oh, or I thought was she it the janitor.
Janitor. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was the janitor. And then
I love that part, by the way,
her killing another person. So yeah. Are we sure she doesn't kill the janitor and the counselor?
Oh gosh, maybe.
I feel like
I remember is
I
like
know the exact
I loved that part
of this movie.
Yeah,
so.
Me either. I just loved that part so much. I really was.
Oh yeah, it's like the Halloween dance at the school.
Yes,
is great.
Yes, I loved it.
Yeah, Ginger informs Bridget that she has this intent to go after Sam next at the greenhouse bash. So I guess there's also a party going on at a greenhouse. Super appropriate. It's a Halloween party that's hosted by him that leaves Bridget alone. So I think she's going there to attack Sam. And I think honestly, this is a jealousy thing because she doesn't like the attention that Bridget has been giving Sam, even though like the attention is about her, but like she hasn't been paying enough attention to what's been going on, or
she
suspects
that fuel
that Bridget,
inside of her. Yeah,
yeah, she suspects that Bridget is into Sam and she doesn't like it. This is when Pamela Fitzgerald Pam finds the fingers and Trina's corpse in the shed and goes looking for her daughters. She finds a running Bridget and picks her up, and she drives Bridget to the greenhouse bash and she tells her that she will protect them at all costs.
Aww.
And it's like this really great scene because she's basically like, I'm gonna go like pack all our bags and stuff, we'll pack up everything and we're just gonna leave the house, we don't need to take your dad. Like, and basically because he's just like this oblivious lug in the corner or whatever. So Bridget arrives at the party to find Ginger hurting Sam for rejecting her advances, and by this point Ginger is like full she-wolf.
Yes,
almost
like amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, like, she looks so hot, like so good. Seriously.
She has a lot of nipples at this point in time also.
Yes, that too. Yes.
Which she's got a midriff shirt on. So
right.
They're like all there. But
I love that part.
So in despair, because I think she does have a crush on Sam, Bridget wounds Ginger and herself and claps. Puts their hands together like they used to do for their pact. So she's infecting herself with Ginger's blood at that moment in time. But they have that whole like death pact that they used to do that with their hands. So she convinces Ginger of her loyalty and genuine willingness to help her sister, ending their little spat that they were having. And as the sisters leave, Bridget decides to abandon her mother, who's waiting outside, I think.
By the van.
Uh-huh. And so outside, Ginger feels her transformation approaching, and Sam knocks her unconscious with a shovel. Bridget and Sam take Ginger back to the Fitzgerald house. Like, they put her in the back of the van, and the whole transformation happens while she's in the back of the van. I can't remember if the van has a divider or something, so they wouldn't be able to see what's going on back there. I think it does. Because they have to go back and prepare like more care for her.
Yep. Yep. So,
Ginger regains consciousness and fully transforms into a werewolf. She's this like gorgeous white werewolf.
Yes.
That I think has to do with being with like femininity.
Yeah. The purity of it.
Yeah. So she does that and she is on the way home and then she escapes the van. So aware that she has transformed, Sam and Bridget hide in the pantry as Sam makes the cure. And when he goes to find Ginger, Ginger attacks and drags him away like down the hallway and there's like blood everywhere. So I still don't really know exactly what happened to Sam. I think that he got mauled enough that he probably died up there
right
in the hallway. I can't really remember.
So. I can't remember either, but I think that.
But Bridget finds Sam and he's injured and bloody. So I don't know. Does he die? Yeah. Okay. So she tries to save him by drinking his blood to calm Ginger down. Like she... Ginger's watching and she bends over and starts licking his blood off the floor. So but is unable to go through with it. It's like she gags or whatever.
Yeah, she's like,
Ginger senses that Bridget is like repulsed and not sincere in her actions, and so she kills Sam right in front of Bridget. So he does die. I couldn't remember if he died or not. And then Ginger stalks Bridget through the basement. So this is like the big,
I love that scene.
Yeah, it's the big climax scene in their special place, like the room that they share in the basement. And Bridget returns to the room where they grew up. Bridget defends herself while holding the syringe in one hand and a knife in the other. But Ginger lunges at Bridget into the knife, which fatally wounds her. And I think Bridget is just like devastated at this point. So looking at pictures taken of both sisters throughout their adventures of
death,
you know, making fun death stuff. Bridget lays her head on her dying sister's chest and just cries. And then the movie ends. But I wanted to ask you who your favorite character is. Like, my favorite character is actually Pamela Fitzgerald.
No, that's hilarious.
Don't come after Pam, because Pam is like, she's so kooky.
Right.
And just like
the best.
She's like the kooky, weird mom.
Right.
And she just lets them do whatever they want.
Right.
But still gives them normal mom advice.
Right. Right. No,
but isn't,
I mean,
overbearing, but she just also has that her own kooky sense of style, in the sense that she is like, she's also a weirdo. She's just not like dark and macabre. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. But and
another one of those people that just like is a kind of fun spirit that a lot of other people probably wouldn't understand.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I
feel like she'd advocate for, you know, being your truest self.
100%. 100%. No, honestly, and this is kind of obvious, I guess, from my reactions, but Ginger. I just love Ginger so much. And I think there's a part of us, in all of us, you know, especially women presenting, you know, women that want to be that way, just like fearless, essentially.
And I know they do this correlation with feminism, but I think that a lot of people could relate to Ginger, not just women growing up. And the reason I kind of stopped for a second is because, like, I was born a woman, but I have identified as they, them for like 2 years now. So for a second, I was like, it felt very weird to call myself a girl growing up. I think a lot of us can identify with
100%
the Ginger character and the transformation that Ginger went through as an adolescent, right? Because it's also kind of a picture of adolescence and all
absolutely.
The struggles and the
absolutely.
Things we go through.
Right. And I think for me personally, you know, I – so kind of my story, and, you know, we're going to be in the horror anthology together, you and I, Enola. So, you know, I talked about in my story a little bit that, you know, a lot of what I wanted to be like was stripped away from me because of fear. I couldn't like horror movies out in the open. I couldn't like all this blood and gore and, you know, all of these other things, or else I would be considered an outcast, you know, quote unquote. So I think just her being Ginger, her being, you know, her authentic, just like wild self, you know, I just loved that. I really did. And I felt like a longing to, I guess, kind of be that way. And like, you know, me, I've talked a little bit about my identity. You know, I'm demisexual, panromantic. So I'm more, you know, on the romantic scale when it comes to like sex and all of those things. And so I didn't so much relate to that, but just more, she wasn't scared to be herself and she felt super powerful. And I freaking loved it. I freaking loved it. But yeah, no, obviously with respect to, you know, male, female, non-binary and the rest, you know, like, I think we all have that sense of, I just want to be badass and just do whatever the heck I want and be fearless, you know? So I think that's why.
Ginger, like, I think for the most part, I understood who she was.
Right.
At a really young age where most of us.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
I don't figure it out until I'm like in my 30s, right?
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with like exploring your sexuality and kind of trying to figure out where you fit. And then all these other categories of and then kind of understanding gender fluidity better and things like that too. So I wasn't figuring it out until my early 30s. Or I mean, the first time that I came out was when I was 27. But then I think I kind of went back in the closet for a while because my parents' reaction at the time was very like gaslighty. So and then in my 30s I had moved away to Los Angeles, so that's when it was like, ooh, okay, I'm away from my family, and that's a what a lovely place to start exploring.
yeah
So you know, and then you kind of start to figure it out, and sometimes we don't have that kind of positive reinforcement, or we don't have someone like Bridget there to support us in all of the things that we do, whether they are similar interests, different interests. Like at the end of the day, Bridget still supported Ginger.
Yes. Oh, through and through. I mean, was
having
like,
a good support system is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, me being 29, turning 30, I feel like I'm finally figuring myself out, you know? And so, yeah, I guess maybe
the formative years.
Right. Right. I guess, you know, a piece of me loved that she just knew. She just knew. And, you know, I don't know. I just related to it, and like her love of like death and like all the SFX makeup. Like, obviously, you know that I do SFX makeup on my channel and stuff. Like, duh, of course I love that. But yeah, in an emotional aspect, I felt really attached to Ginger, because I'm starting to feel that now about myself, very fearless and like, I don't care. This is me. You know, like, obviously in a respectful way, I'm not a freaking asshole, but you know, like I love myself, and I felt like she did at that age, and it felt really nice to see that. And it gave me some Jennifer's Body vibes.
Oh yeah. This is like Jennifer's Body, pre Jennifer's Body. Canada did it first. Sorry, guys.
They did.
So I also want to jump into running down some interesting film facts.
Ooh, yes.
From
my fave.
From Screen Rant, called 10 Howling Facts About Ginger Snaps, which I'm like, way to go with the pun. but I want to check these out and run these down, because there's probably a lot of these that I don't know yet. So apparently they had a difficult time casting. It said one of the biggest production issues was finding two actresses to play the leads. And while they were able to secure a casting director in Los Angeles, obtaining a Canadian casting director proved to be more difficult. So eventually they found one, and 6 months into the audition process, Perkins and Isabel were cast. So that's like a really long casting process.
Yeah, that is. Holy heck.
The only thing for me is that Perkins and Isabel look nothing like each other.
Right. Like, completely so opposite. Yes. Like,
are these fraternal twins? Because they're also not twins, which is funny.
Yeah.
Because they have this whole pact about Out by 16. So I always thought that they were fraternal twins, but.
Right.
And then I don't know if Ginger also is like a couple grades ahead because she's a smarty pants because they're in the same classes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So the other thing is weird coincidences. So Isabel and Perkins apparently shared a lot of things in common. They were born in the same hospital, attended the same school, had the same agent, and were represented by the same casting agency in Vancouver.
Holy shit.
As a result, they'd known each other for several years before being cast in the film, and Perkins had actually played Isabel's younger sister, despite the fact that Perkins is 5 years older than Isabel. So, and then Perkins also shares the same birthday as Jesse Boss, apparently, who played Jason.
Interesting.
Ginger's weird jock love interest.
Right, right.
So apparently Ginger Snaps was the first time that they played sisters, and then they played siblings again in the Disney Channel's adaptation of A Cinderella Story.
Okay.
So what is this? Except this time they were not playing werewolves or death-obsessed teens, but mean girls who competed against Selena Gomez's character.
Oh my
God. So I think that they were the evil like stepsisters.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. What the heck?
I didn't know that.
Me either.
Okay. The werewolf suit. So director John Fawcett was very adamant that there would be no CGI used.
Love it.
And that they would use practical effects.
Love it.
Which is part of what makes this film so great.
So
there
great.
Was actually a stuntman who wore a werewolf suit whenever the scene called for it. That's really cool. And, They were only able to like shoot for 20 minutes at a time because the stuntman would get really hot.
I can imagine. Right.
So they had to be careful about heat asphyxiation.
Right.
So.
Right.
It makes a sense. Lot of that costume does not look cozy.
No,
that's for sure.
No. And honestly, it almost kind of aligned in a way for me with, now tell me if I'm getting this title correct, because I always have a heart, American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, an American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, okay. For some reason, that is a tongue twister for me.
There's definitely portions throughout this film where it's kind of reminiscent of the final scene sequence where the werewolf character, and I'm forgetting the main character's name at the moment, but runs around London, basically.
Yes. So. I loved the werewolf style. As someone who would love to do, you know, creature creation one day in their life, I was like, oh my God, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I need it right now. So yeah, it was
the white werewolf at the end of this movie is gorgeous.
Yes, so. Stunning.
It's so absolutely scary though too.
Oh, it's like for sure. The fact that it's all the fact that it's all practical, like chef's kiss in my opinion. Like, ugh. There, you can't go wrong.
Sometimes I think you could tell that it's a suit, but like, because you can kind of tell that it's rubber, I think.
Gotcha.
For the most part, because they did a lot of glistening up, it looks really good. So.
Yeah, I really like it.
So the connection with Bridget. So Perkins apparently resonated with Bridget's character because they were both viewed as social outcasts in high school. But like her character, she didn't pay anyone any mind, like it wasn't concerning to her at all. So she remembered her and her best friend having the same kind of dynamic as Bridget and Ginger, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Except that they dressed in like dark clothing and stuff. And like really big oversized jackets. So this was not Perkins' first rodeo, and this is actually where I remembered Perkins from, where I recognized her from, was because Perkins previously acted in Stephen King's miniseries It. So she played one of the child characters. And that's where I recognized her from. And I could never put my finger on it because she's so much older in this film, but her face is very much the same. So she starred alongside Tim Curry, Seth Green, and Jonathan Brandis as Beverly Marsh, the only girl in the Losers Club.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah, so I don't know if you have seen the miniseries.
I actually have not.
Very different because it kind of like jumps back and forth in time versus like being the younger time period and then the older time period. That's kind of what I liked about the film adaptations, that it very clearly separated those things, because sometimes it was a little confusing to follow in the miniseries. But the miniseries is terrifying. Tim Curry is the scariest. I hate clowns. The scariest clown I've ever seen. And like, yes, the new version of Pennywise is great, but like Tim Curry is terrifying as Pennywise. So definitely give the miniseries a watch if you get a chance. But the choreography with the werewolf is another fun fact. So apparently for Perkins' scenes with Ginger as a full-fledged werewolf, she worked with a stunt coordinator, and this was to ensure that they practiced the scenes and no one would get harmed while filming. So apparently the coordinator had insisted that they'd be very cautious of any corners or edges that the stuntman in the werewolf suit could potentially fall on and cause an accident. So the suit was really heavy, apparently. I think that's kind of what I noticed is like, yeah, it does heavy.
It looks very thick.
Yeah. Cause there's apparently Perkins was like wearing some thick padding. And then first impressions. So Isabel was unimpressed with the early drafts of the script she received. She acknowledged when she got the first two or three scenes, they were out of context. So the actress was convinced it would be a corny B movie, a B horror movie. But she still auditioned alongside Perkins anyway. And then she received an updated version of the script. She and Perkins both really loved it. So she felt that it diverted from typical horror movies and presented really strong female characters, which for definitely sure it does.
Absolutely.
Yeah, apparently Isabel had a lot of fun shooting the film, but there were a lot of problems. The actors and crew filmed in Toronto during winter, which is known to be extremely cold in that region. Isabel remembered that the cast and crew caught a new illness like every other week, including the flu, bronchitis, laryngitis.
They
would also be working like nearly 20 hours a day, getting less than 4 hours of sleep and eating little to nothing due to the business of the filming schedule. So I don't think you can do that kind of thing now.
There's no way,
but you know, someone somewhere making an indie film will probably get away with it.
Yeah, so my chronically ill ass is like, absolute, where's the nap time, you right know?
So the last fact is about the makeup chair. So to become a werewolf, it took about 5 hours of applying makeup to transform Isabel and 2 hours to remove it. So she remarked that the makeup artist was great and would bring a laptop for her to watch movies while they did their magic. And due to the prosthetics that were covering her face, her skin color couldn't, her skin couldn't breathe, which resulted in her nose getting congested. So to remedy that, they stuck two cotton swabs up her nostrils, which prevented any dripping or anything when she was actually doing the acting and stuff. So I think that's why she sounds so nasally in the movie.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And
so it's not just a performance thing. It's right that literally her nose was plugged.
Oh my gosh.
But apparently it was humorous for her. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's some fun facts about the film. Thank you, Screen Rant. So this is where you get to rate the film with your bloody knives. So this is kind of the time when we like to rank it. Like, I have previously already given this film like 3.5 out of 5. The reason for that was just kind of how I felt overall about the performances and everything. Like, it's very close to a 4, but I just keep it at a 3.5, so there's room to improve. So what's your bloody knife rating?
If we're going by like halves, like how you kind of did, I mean, I'm gonna give it a 3.5 as well. And I mean, it's like literally tiptoeing on 4 or 2 for me. I really loved the film. I do. The one thing that bothered me, I think, was that they didn't look more like they related, like they were family. I think that bothered me a little bit. And then just some of the, I don't know, I'm not like a very humorous person. Like, I'm more on the dark side of things. I don't know. Some of it was kind of corny, but overall, I loved the film. And like I said, I really related to Ginger a lot and like yearned for that moment in my life, which I officially am getting now. So I watched this film last year. So it's fairly recent that I've seen this film. But yeah, that's what I would give it. That's what I would say.
Awesome. Well, I have to say, I mean, Ginger Snaps is not one that I go back to super often.
Right.
And one thing that I did want to do with you, have you seen all of the other films or you hadn't?
No, I have not.
That's fine. I was like, a lot of people have seen them all. I've seen them all, but I only saw the second one this year. I will say that I think the character of Ghost in the second film is actually played by Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black. I don't know if you've seen Orphan Black. I was obsessed. I thought Orphan Black was the coolest thing, and just her range is amazing. So I was even more inclined to watch it because she's in the film as a very young child. And it was really good. You know, at first I wasn't really sure, but it really unfolded in a super interesting way, and the film is absolutely great. So
is it on Shudder?
Actually, they're all on Shudder. Okay, actually, perfect. To watch perfect. For free. So
okay.
Definitely check out Ginger Snaps 2 Unleashed, and then there's Ginger Snaps The Beginning, which I think most people rank as the worst. Because it's like a prequel, but I thought it was kind of cool to go back in time to the 1800s. And like, I think it was more about like werewolf origins than the sister story.
Right.
But they still play sisters.
Yeah. Okay.
In that version. So.
Okay. Interesting. Kind of like a Fear Street thing. It's kind of seeming. Okay. Yeah,
a little bit. A little bit.
Interesting.
The trilogy before the Fear Street trilogy or right. not, because I think Carl Stein wrote those in the 90s.
I think so too. Yeah.
This is a great film. So thanks for coming to chat about it with me. And
of course,
I hope you'll come back again and talk about another movie.
If you will have me, I will be here. I like to talk horror and the deeper meanings behind what it means to me as an individual, you know? So absolutely. You let me know and we'll find a movie and we'll discuss it.
Thanks for gathering around the campfire, listeners. Come slay away with us next time, and be sure to follow on Twitter and Facebook.
Hey, Slayers! Did you enjoy that episode? If you like the podcast, we encourage you to head over to Podchaser and leave us a review. The best part is, it helps put Slayaway in the hands of more horror fans.